Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, on SI writer, Dustin Schutte with me. Dustin, we are closing in on the end of the season, aren't we?
We are. End of the regular season, rivalry week. It's a great week. I'm also looking forward to Thanksgiving. It's probably my favorite holiday. So this is it. There's still like a lot of football to be played, but of the regular season, this is it.
It is Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving to you, to our listeners. And Dustin, this is a question. I think I've told you this before. We have a segment with Andy Shea called Ask Andy, where the listeners send in their questions. So since you brought up Thanksgiving, I will ask you the question, favorite food for Thanksgiving.
Oh, man. Favorite food for Thanksgiving. So I want to go with pecan pie. That's my favorite. We pronounce it pecan because
not pecan.
Pecan, that's what you keep under your bed at night when you get a little older.
That hit a little too close to home here for me.
I really like, I'm a big green bean casserole fan too.
Really?
That's one of my favorites, yes. So I'll put that out there. I'll give you a little bit different answer. I love the turkey, mashed potatoes. I'm a big mac and cheese fan, but on Thanksgiving, I think green bean casserole is my favorite.
Well, I cheated a little bit with my answer. I love leftovers, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So for me, it's the Friday after Thanksgiving, kind of the mashup of turkey, mashed potatoes, the stuffing, gravy slathered over the top of it, and then you go watch football together. And when I was a kid, that meant – everybody else is out of the house except me and Dad. And Penn State used to play Pitt Friday after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And when we were kids, it was a treat to eat in the living room. But that was a day Dad and I were allowed to eat in the living room. Mostly we were allowed because Mom wasn't in the house.
Well, that makes it even better. I like that there's a little story to that, too. Now, because I just do leftovers. Some people make a sandwich. I'm not a leftover sandwich person.
Not with the turkey. No, I'm like heated up. And it was like my dad had very select things that he would be able to cook. And I'm using air quotes for it. So that in his mind, that was considered cooking. Put it on the stovetop and put all the stuff in. And it's just kind of like, what do you think, Jim? More gravy? Yeah. There's no such thing as advising less gravy, okay?
That's correct, yes.
It's always more, okay?
Yes, I agree.
And it was probably pretty ugly looking, but to us, it was beautiful, Dustin.
Yeah, I can totally get on board with that. I'm a fan of that.
So I probably am a bigger fan of day after Thanksgiving than I am actual Thanksgiving Day. So
that's fair. Yep. I think that's fair.
Anyway, as much as I'm sure even our listeners enjoy the food talk, and trust me, they do. We get the reaction for it. Let's move on to football. It was an interesting week of games last week. We had talked about them coming up. Let's start with, the local team, Penn State. Easily, Dustin, easily their best effort. A lot of students were already home for their Thanksgiving break, but the crowd there was still enthusiastic, nice crowd. By the end of the game, they were chanting for Terry Smith to become the next full-time head coach at Penn State. From outside looking in, what'd you think of the game? How much of it did you see?
Let's see. I saw through about midway through the third quarter. So
that was enough.
And enough to know when it was decided. Catron Allen and Penn State's run game was magnificent again. they were able to move the, it seemed like seamlessly they were able to move the football down the field, and the defense really came to play too. Like, that was, I didn't see as much of the Michigan State game, but this was a really complete complete performance, almost like they were supposed to play all season long. And Ethan Grunkmeyer to complete 11 of 12 passes, a touchdown pass in there. Just one of the, probably, would you say, I mean, this is against the power. I mean, obviously a Nebraska team that was 7-3, this was probably their best performance of the season.
I think by far, if you wanted to argue, you know, coming close against Indiana, playing them toe to toe, but you know, when you walk away with the loss, no moral victories. Yes, I think this was the most complete game. And I thought the thing that impressed me and impresses me with Terry Smith on the field, forget the, I believe, blue and white and on and on and on. That's real nice, sentimental, great story, love it. But show me what you could do on the field.
Yeah.
And what he did was something we hadn't seen, which was Grunkmeyer didn't throw many passes, but the passes he threw were down the field.
Yeah.
And something I'd been yelling and screaming for a couple seasons. How about throwing the ball on first down? You establish that you could run, play action pass on first down. And what was amazing is we saw wide receivers that were open, Dustin. That was, something freaky at Penn State.
Yeah, I was going to say, not only were they open, they were wide open, Jim. Like, there was a lot of times there wasn't a defender in sight. And so the offensive game plan worked to perfection. I don't know. I just made the comment when we were watching the game, like, well, Nebraska certainly appeared at Penn State. Like, they made an appearance. I don't know if they got off the bus or what happened there, but like, that was complete from start to finish. Like, that was one of those games where you could tell who the better team was. I'm sure they had a little bit something more to play for with it being senior night and wanting to send Terry Smith out with a home victory. So I'm sure there was a little bit more oomph maybe. And I think, and maybe we'll talk about that. I'm not trying to derail anything here, no. But this is one of those games where I feel like you look at it and you just say, man, if we could have just played like this all season. Even if you lose to Oregon and to Indiana, the two best teams on your schedule, well, I guess if you want to throw Ohio State in there too, but you're still looking at, maybe you could have beat Indiana. Maybe it's 10-2. You got a big signature win and you're talking about the playoffs, and you certainly don't lose to UCLA and you certainly don't lose to Northwestern if you were to play like this all season long. So I think that, you know, we talked off air, you said you've kind of reached that post mourning stage after a death of where it's, you know, anger, mourning, sadness, acceptance. And you've reached that acceptance stage. I'm sure most Penn State fans probably are because it's so late in the season, but there's probably also a contingent of fans that are like, if we could have just done this and we could have gone 10-2, we'd be back in the playoff. But maybe it's one of those things where they were also ready to see a new leader in charge, and maybe it's a little bit of a blessing in disguise. I don't know.
Well, it's even they didn't play particularly well against Oregon, and they still got it into overtime, you know. And hey, if they had mowed the grass a little bit shorter that day, so yes, there is that conversation, the what ifs, but it also is this coach is getting more out of that team. And it just confirms, I think, that the change had to be made. You know, there was something wrong in that relationship. And someone was asking me about it over the weekend. I saw a lot of Nebraska people there, and that may have been where the conversation was. And it's like, hey, you could say James Franklin is a really good coach and all that, and he might do really, really well at Virginia Tech. But I don't think Penn State fans are going to regret the parting. And I don't think James Franklin is either. It was a marriage that had its day and it's run its course.
Yeah. I mean, Lovey Smith used to say this, sometimes divorce is a good thing. And it may have just been the thing where It was just James Franklin has reached his potential at Penn State, and it just wasn't going to work for the long term. For whatever reason, I don't know. I'm not behind the scenes. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's important that you have the right coach in there now and you pursue your goals. But, I mean, just it's been impressive to see, you know, Penn State these last 3 weeks, really, Indiana, Michigan State, and Nebraska. I don't know that they played particularly well in that Michigan State game. Michigan State is just atrocious. But for them to be able to win two of their last three, to take Indiana to the wire, potentially win all three. And I know this doesn't mean anything, Jim. I know that a bowl game doesn't mean anything. But just the fact that you would be able to get there when this season could have ended 3-9 and probably nobody would have batted an eye, I think it shows Terry Smith's ability and that really that whole staff's ability to kind of rally the troops.
And you're seeing it in the games with not just the skill position players, but the line of scrimmage. The offensive line, coming into the season, we thought it might be one of the best, if not the best in the country. It was far from it. But these last couple weeks, and I think where it's the position where effort is most critical. Yeah. You know, you really got to want to do it if you're on the offensive line. And we're actually seeing that. So that's where a change in coach seemed to have made a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line played outstanding. There were times when, like, there were two or three different holes that were opened up for the running back to just kind of choose between. And obviously, Catron Allen made some phenomenal plays. He's got great vision. This is kind of like one of those seasons where I don't want to say, like, you feel bad for the players, right? Like, Catron Allen's a really good player. I think the offensive line is good. Drew Aller, let's not forget this. Like, they've done this the last 3 weeks without their starting quarterback.
Right.
Right? And so that makes a huge difference, too. So, yeah, I mean, this has just been kind of a wild season. I bet that one felt really good, though. That was just like the most dominant performance they've had all season. So that had to feel good from the staff all the way down to the last player on the roster.
It is a feel-good story. You mentioned the quarterback, Drew Aller, and I've always been a big supporter of his. Quite candidly, he was part of the problem, both he and James Franklin. And, you know, I hate to use especially for the player, addition by subtraction. And Ethan Grunkmeyer in his first couple games, you could see they were his first couple games. But it's really interesting to see after just four games or so, the maturity, seeing him grow up. All right, Dustin, when we come back, I'm going to ask you who Penn State's next coach should be when we get back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. Over there is a master chef, Dustin Schutte. We spent way too much time talking about food and treats and cookies and fudge between segments, Dustin.
Yeah, we could spend a whole show just talking, and probably then some, about food and cooking, about the holidays. It was a good conversation. I'm sorry that the people are going to miss it.
I have to, and just to say, this is me blaming Dustin for it. He started it talking about peanut butter cheesecake.
What can I say? It's the best kind of cheesecake, but you can only have maybe even half a slice is enough to get you through a day. It is rich.
And as soon as you mentioned it, though, Dustin, that's it. I was gone. I was off on the tangent with you, and it was difficult to come back. But let's do it. Let's get back to football. We'll talk a little bit. Yeah, Penn State football, the situation they're in with Terry Smith and Dustin, we've seen such progress in this team in every way possible. Play calling, offense, defense, development of the quarterback. Only natural. Nittany Nation is saying, we want Terry Smith as the next head coach. A colleague of mine has said he's in this. It's his heart versus his head right now. His heart not only wants Terry Smith, but wants Terry Smith and it to work. Outside looking in, I always ask for that perspective. What do you think would be the best route for Penn State to take coaching-wise?
So I have a couple of thoughts on this. The first one is I think it's always easy to get attached to the interim coach, especially if there's a little bit of success there, because – I mean, it's a well-liked guy, right? Like, he's not doing it for the $52 million contract. He's a Penn State guy. He's found a way to rally the troops. But it's so hard to lead that level of program when you haven't done it. And you can say he's winning games, but there's so much more to being a head coach than just coaching on Saturdays. It's the preparation. It's the recruiting. It's the scouting. It's all this stuff. And I'm not saying Terry Smith has never done that. He's just never been in charge of doing that. And that's a big difference. And that's why a lot of times when you see an interim coach maybe doesn't work out, it's because that they're in over their head. So my first instinct is to say, this is a good story. It would be awesome if the next coach keeps him on staff. Probably not going to be the one to get Penn State where it needs to be, where the fans want it to be. And then you also run the risk of, I don't want to say Terry Smith would be hated, but you know how what's the word I'm looking for? How toxic social media can get. And it doesn't take long for the lack of success to bring out that toxicity in people. And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality of it. My other thought to this, though, is if Pat Kraft and Penn State say, you know what? We don't really have a candidate that we think is good. Can you hire Terry Smith on a one-year interim and give him the shot? That's not going to be a popular opinion, but do you give him 1 year to say, hey, this is going to be your interview process. Let's see how 1 year goes, but we're going to continue to look for the next head coach. We just didn't like anybody in this cycle. Now, whether Terry Smith would agree to that or not, I don't know. But that could potentially be his audition. Those are my two thoughts. The one thing you'd have to acknowledge, though, if you're a Penn State fan, is you're essentially surrendering up a year for an experiment.
Here, it's an interesting concept, and you're not the first one to bring that up. You're not the first one to bring that up on our show. Actually, earlier this week, Mike Villagrana, who is the executive director of the Penn State Collective, we were having this conversation, and he's in the building, knows Terry Smith, likes him a lot, has given us some insights into him, which I'll share with you in a moment. But his feeling, hey, why not Terry on a short-term contract? Just like what you said. Now, he said maybe 2 years or 3 years. Why not do that? Now, my only problem with it is short term, especially like only 1 year. If you're a commit high school player, yeah, transfer portal guy, hey, this is still, you know, he's the substitute teacher. Who's the real teacher going to be? And the fear of that, I might suggest where these big names, you know, like how much money is Lane Kiffin going to get? 12 to 15 million, maybe?
Yeah, depends on how much they're able to rob out of the Children's Foundation, but sure.
But if you're hiring, if you just got done, you know, paying James Franklin $9 million to not coach, you were prepared to pay him $50 million to not coach. Would Terry Smith, would he take a $5 million deal to be the head coach, but not for 1 year or two? How about for 4 years? 4 years, $20 million. So if you're a high school recruit, hey, they committed 4 years to him. But the bottom line is still the bottom line. After a year or two, the administration says, this is an experiment that's not working. The balance of the contract is $10 million. We could find that in coins hidden in the couch.
Right.
You know, so to me, that I think you would have to give at least enough of a commitment to him to make it appear we're all in with him, not, we'll see what goes on. What do you think of that idea?
No, I think that's a good point. I would say, I think that's a really good strategy, because then you can still get your way out of that. If it goes off the rails, let's say you have a Deshaun Foster situation. I'm just saying that because it's the best example I have, where it just completely goes off the rails and you're losing games to everybody by 30 points. You can get out of that pretty easily. And maybe Pat Kraft has somebody in mind that he's just waiting to hire. I don't know. But I don't know. The thing to me is, and I understand that athletic departments find money in crazy ways and there's always going to be the donor. But if you are not 100% certain that you have your guy, why would you spend $60 million to say, we think this guy's going to work out? Like, I've been high on Eli Drinkwitz, which Missouri has kind of fallen off a little bit. Now, I know they've got quarterback issues and there's been some things there. Jed Fish, I think, is another really good candidate. They lost to Wisconsin in Wisconsin. So I think there are still some solid candidates out there, but is there one that you just say, yeah, this guy's going to, and I know in college football, it's very hard to just say, yeah, this guy's going to work, because fit is a factor. Money's a factor. Support's a factor. All that stuff, fan bases, all that stuff is a factor. Penn State's in the upper echelon of most of that category. But you don't want to you don't want a Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State sort of situation where you're right. Like, you think this guy's pretty good, but maybe he doesn't quite fit. We'll trust him to figure it out. Don't pay that guy $50 million. You know, at least Terry Smith's going to fit the culture. So if worse comes to worse, give him, like you said, 3 to 4 years, but it's a low contract with a limited buyout. And I would think, maybe it sounds disrespectful, but I would think Terry Smith would be like, if it's this or I don't have a job, I'm going to take my chances. I'm going to bet on me. And then after 2 years, you can renegotiate that contract and get a better deal if things are working out for you.
Exactly. And if you're a position coach, okay, remember, he wasn't a coordinator. Mm-hmm. So he's not already making $3 or $4 million where,
right.
And he's now got head coach on his resume. So, you know, I think that it's the compromise that would work. And that extra $5, $7, $8 million per year you're not spending on a head coach, maybe you do that on talent acquisition.
Yep, talent acquisition. You could, you know, you'd have maybe a little bit larger pool to go out and get the the coordinators and the position coaches that you see fit. And maybe he thinks what they have now he would want to retain. I have no idea. But you could disperse that money in a lot of different ways. And like you said, then, you know, you're open to the transfer portal. You're open to the recruiting. I mean, there's a legitimate chance you could keep a majority, maybe not a majority. You could keep some of those pieces to the 2026 class intact at that point. So I think there are some benefits there. It's just a matter of you are going to have to, like, you are taking a fairly large gamble because you don't know what you don't know what his experience is like in terms of running a football program in the off season and then up to leading the season.
There's a lot more to it. You're a CEO. You really are. And let me give you my transformation or the process I've gone through. The name Terry, I'm like, okay, that's nice. The guy, everybody in the building likes, the players like him. Penn State or bleeds blue and white, all that good stuff. To me, this isn't the coach. Heard great things about him, heard his first press conference. This man, he's not that dynamic kind of leader. And then when they lost a game or two, he'd talk about, we're throwing the ball horizontal, we're not doing vertical, not getting it down the field. And I'm like, Terry, you're the head coach. It's up to you to make that happen. You're in charge, make it happen. Well, you know what, Dustin? He did. He made those things happen. And he was able to throw the ball down the field and still build the offense around the running backs.
Right.
When we had been so frustrated, they were just kept throwing those running backs between the tackles and running into a brick wall. Now they have them running wide. They're getting Nick Singleton out on the edge. The running game has transformed. The offensive line went from what is wrong with them to playing how we expected. So to me, I'm not just seeing the touchy-feely, gee, he's a good guy and we like him. I'm also seeing the X's and O's going on. And, you know, we're coming up to a hard break here. I want to give you and our listeners who may have missed it earlier, you know, Mike Villagrana, he has told me both on the air and off the air a couple stories about how Terry Smith handles things, which I think they were very informative, that how he handles situations. And like I said, I'm just running out the clock here, Dustin. I'll admit it even to our listeners. I'm running out the clock because I don't want to start the story and then have to stop midway through it. Because once I present it, I also want to get your reaction to it and see if that's, you know, makes sense to you. Also, even though I'm starting to support Terry, I'm going to give you the outside name that I would be interested in for Penn State when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number three of our show, which is called College Football and Sweet Treats. Fudge, cheesecake.
I got to tell you, okay, I'm going to mention this too. So we were talking also about pecan pie. I think I have this, it's called the South's Best Butts. Okay, so it's a barbecue cookbook, but it has like a southern pecan pie recipe in there.
Yes.
But just like, I think it's a half, no, half cup's too much. I think it may be like a shot, whatever the cup amount is, whatever. A shot or two of bourbon or rye whiskey in there. Oh, let me tell you, Jim, it'll change your life.
Tell you what, we got to, I was just getting ready. I'm going to send you, after you mentioned pecan pie, I had mentioned these pecan cookies that my grandmother used to make. I'll send you that recipe. You send me that recipe, okay? So we'll exchange pecan recipes. Of course, mine is a scan of my grandmother's recipe notebook. It was on pages of a tablet that would crack the paper if you bent it. So it's all yellowed. And they use expressions. It's not even margarine. It's sticks of oleo.
You got to get the right stuff.
I don't know if young people know what oleo is. But it's margarine, okay? Yeah. All right, let's move on. We're talking about Terry Smith and Mike Villagrana, our colleague here on the show. He was in the building, knows Terry Smith. What he said about Terry Smith, which impressed me, was oftentimes the assistant coach, he's the nice guy. He's the friend. He doesn't have to be the guy who has to be the disciplinarian. You know, he doesn't have to be like the head coach. He could be friends with the players. But Terry has mentioned this, that he will have the hard conversation. And Mike explained that Jim, he is just really good at it. He probably had a conversation where he sat down with the offensive coordinator and didn't do it in a way that's confrontational, but let them know, hey, we've got to start getting the ball down the field. And guess what? We're seeing that. And he does it in a way that doesn't damage the relationship. He's just so good at that kind of thing. To me, that's a tremendous thing, a compliment, and it sounds great, but it's also kind of a touchy-feely thing.
Yeah.
Translate it to on the field for me. Well, guess what, Dustin? He did.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite on the Terry Smith train, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, I think after you saw what happened Saturday, I think there's a lot more people that are probably willing to give him a shot in that position. That's probably, and I've never coached, so take this with a grain of salt, but I would feel like making that transition from being an assistant coach where you're the picker-upper, right? Like you're the fun uncle to an extent on the field, as opposed to now you have to be the father figure and you have to hand out discipline and things like that. That's got to be an incredibly difficult change, especially when you're doing it over the course of a year. And I don't know that a lot of interim coaches are able to do that. And so that's a really positive sign if he's able to make that sort of transition and do it quickly and still earn the respect and have the respect of like, well, what, you know, we were just friends. No, now, you know, I'm your head coach and this is how it's going to be. So to be able to make that, and obviously the players responded. So
yes.
I think that's a really good sign. I'm with you. I can't get past the fact that usually the interim coach to head coach, sometimes it works out. Dabo Sweeney's a great example of it working out. Ed Orgeron won a national championship, but that was like that went off the rails quickly at LSU. So there are signs where there are times when sometimes it works out and other times when it just doesn't. It's a tough situation. I'm glad I don't have to make this decision if I'm being completely honest.
It is. Pat Kraft is going to be tied to this decision.
And let me just say this too. He's not going to make the right decision no matter what he does. In the eyes of public, he's going to have 50-50 split no matter what for the next 8 months until next season kicks off.
Right. And the challenge for him will be to make the right decision, not the sentimental one, mm-hmm. not the, you know, win the press conference one. You know, there was conversations that Urban Meyer was a candidate. And as I put it then, it was, don't get me the old Urban Meyer, get me the next Urban Meyer.
Right.
And here's a name to remember, I'll put out there, Bob Chesney from James Madison.
Okay.
And I know there's the, well, just because Kurt Cignetti worked out, and I even had people say to me, well, gee, he's winning at James Madison, but that's Kurt Cignetti's team. No, it's not. Cignetti took all the talent with him. And I will, though, quote Kurt Cignetti when he said he's a winner. Look him up. Chesney, he's a winner. Look him up. He's been through, you know, four or five programs, came in. Most of them were losing programs before he got there. And I think it's like 15, 16 years as a head coach. He's had one losing season, which was the first year at a place, and then never had a losing season there again. And to add to it, he's from a little town in Pennsylvania called Coltmont. Not far from Penn State, Central PA. So I like that. It's like the coal region, that kind of guy, which I think is the way to raise a Penn State culture kind of coach.
Yeah, well, and to that point, so there are some programs that are Boise State was like this for a long time, TCU. Now, those teams had consistent head coaches. But there are some programs that at the mid-major level, they're just consistently good. And I was, when you mentioned like, well, those are Kurt Cignetti's guys. First of all, you're correct. That team basically graduated or left with him to go to Indiana. So that's not really his team. But you look, another one that always pops into my head of being consistently good and churning out head coaches that then, what do you want to say they're successful? Like Mack Brown was at Appalachian State. Appalachian State is on the news. Scott Satterfield was at Appalachian State. Eli Drinkwitz was at Appalachian State. Like, some of those programs are just, you're going to, you set yourself up for success because, and a lot of those programs are in the South, so it's probably a little bit easier to recruit. Like, oh, you didn't get that offer to North Carolina or NC State. You can do really well here at the mid-major level. And I think that that does make a difference. So I wouldn't look at just like, oh, well, James Madison's always good. I mean, some of those coaches have to continue that tradition. And then sometimes, like, I think I've told you, I want the guy who's been really, Penn State's a job that I don't know if I want the mid-major guy, just because sometimes that's a big jump. We've seen it with Luke Fickell. We saw it with Scott Frost. We saw it with, you know, some other names out there. But if you feel good about that candidate, you don't worry about the press conference at this point. I don't know, but that's a really good point. I wouldn't look anything past, you know, you still have to be good at James Madison. It's easier to fall off than it is to continue that level of success, especially today with the transfer portal.
Exactly. And that you jump from, Luke Fickell surprises me. Mm-hmm. Because he had all that experience at Ohio State. He was playing with the big boys at Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Same thing I could say Scott Frost at Central Florida. And, you know, there were other stories of issues with Scott Frost going to Nebraska, you know, other conversations about effort and so on. So because it didn't work a couple places doesn't make me think otherwise, you know. I've got to look up Chesney to see how much, if he does have, like, was he on the staff of a larger programs or not. But I do think it's about the right guy. And you mentioned, like, down south, some of these guys, Joe Moorhead going to Mississippi State, Brian Kelly to LSU. Doesn't work, right. You know, Lane Kiffin would probably not work north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Right.
But it's natural that the teams that are looking at him are LSU and Florida. That makes sense too. So there is kind of a culture fit also that you're looking for, and Pat Kraft has to be aware of. Terry Smith, we know he qualifies there. He's a Pennsylvania guy. And the Penn State guy, both. So those are the things for him. I'm still not 100% locked in, and I find it fascinating, Dustin. Also, prior to the game, this was the big conversation last Saturday before the Nebraska game. And my comment constantly was, it's easy to get excited after a win. Mm-hmm. You lose to Nebraska, the Terry Smith train gets derailed.
Right. Right. But you didn't have that, and you probably aren't going to have it on Saturday against Rutgers. So
no,
you're in a really good spot there. So it amps up the level of intensity around that conversation. I do think that one thing, and I don't know if I have a great example of this outside of Mike Locksley. One thing you want to be sure of if I'm Pat Kraft is you don't want Terry Smith to be the next James Franklin. And what I mean by that is he learned a lot from James Franklin. He's basically going to run the program the same way because James had success. Mike Locksley talked a lot about that when he was at Maryland. And he said, these are the way they do things at Alabama. And this is how we're going to do things at Maryland. Mike Locksley's had 3 back-to-back bowl games, but those were all with Taulia Tagovailoa. And they've been pretty bad before and after that. You can't just take – you can take things that maybe James Franklin did. You can take things that you learn from Nick Saban and implement them into your program. But your program also has to reflect your personality. Because if not, people aren't – it's the same thing as the radio show. It's the same thing in your writing. Don't try to be somebody else because you're not going to find success. It's the same way in all of that. So if I'm Pat Kraft and I say, okay, Terry Smith is on our list of 5 candidates or whatever, I want to make sure that Terry Smith has his own plan. And that it's not a replication of what yes. James Franklin did the last 5 years, because clearly that's not going to work. And it won't work for Terry Smith. And I'm not saying it would, but sometimes coaches do fall in that trap, especially when they're in their first year.
Excellent point. Great point. And when I come back, I'm going to give you a political analogy to that point. Stay tuned.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter four of our football slash food slash now political program, Dustin.
All right.
All right. Here's the analogy I'm going to use. You mentioned, you know, the downside, and this is valid. If you're hiring Terry Smith, are you just hiring James Franklin again? The same guy. Do you remember the presidential race last year? Kamala Harris, what would you do different than the last administration?
Nothing.
Gee, nothing.
Yep.
There's not a thing you would do differently? No. And that would be the worst answer Terry could have.
Yes.
Now, that killed her chances. Now, going forward with Terry, I think he's already demonstrated he's not a James Franklin clone.
Sure.
Did you see the pin that Terry Smith was wearing to the Nebraska game?
I did, because you sent it to me. I did not see it before. I don't know when it was zoomed in. I did not see it when you texted me. I was watching the game, but I must have missed that part. And then you sent it to me. So I did see it.
Well, in the Penn State press box, it sent the place into a little bit of a frenzy. And that's not something that you do or has been done as the Penn State football coach. And to me, whether you're happy he did it, think he should not have done it, don't care. I'm not going to relitigate that whole discussion. But what it showed me is this guy had the guts. I'm saying guts. I want to point out to an area of the body a little further south. He had the guts to do that. That showed me something.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that, I think the best thing you can do as a football coach, and this is probably going to be, there's probably going to be people who are like, really? Lane Kiffin is an example. But you want to be authentically yourself, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, because that's, your team is a reflection of your personality. And I think Lane Kiffin is a perfect example of that. He doesn't care what people think of him. I think that what he's done in terms of his last couple weeks at Ole Miss, has been like just annoying.
Yes. To
silence all this. So I think there's a lot of criticism about Lane Kiffin, but there's a reason why he's able to get those recruits and they play well for him, because he is authentically himself. You could point to a lot of different coaches who are authentically themselves, whether that's quiet, reserved. Jeff Brom's another great example. Like, he is I think he would rather fight you than talk to you. His teams tend, sometimes it's not a good thing, but those teams tend to fight. Sometimes they don't always win, and so those are some examples there. So I think you saw that Terry Smith was like, you know what, enough of this charade. I'm not going to pretend like this didn't happen here, and I'm just going to be myself. And I do think there's a little bit of like, this is going to get me some, for lack of a better term, some brownie points, maybe with some donors or some old alums or whatever the case might be. So I do think that there's an element of that, but he's not going to do that if that's not really who he is. And so embracing the past is probably something, maybe it gets him the job. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe people say, hey, we can't have that. But you at least know that that is authentically him.
You put that really well. I'm going to go into politics a little bit. We had someone say, would a campaign manager advise him to do that?
Right.
Campaign managers are typically risk adverse. Yep. I'm betting if he had a campaign manager for this job, they'd say, no, Terry, no, that's probably not the smartest thing to do. But I think your point is more important, which is, who is he? This is Terry. It's authentic. What you see is what you get, and for good or bad, but he's authentic. And players are pretty good at figuring that out, who you are. So as you go, I think there's different cultural fits. If you went to Michigan with Jim Harbaugh as the coach, you knew what you were signing up for.
Yeah. Yeah. You were going to be in for store for a really weird head coach. But that is him. Like there are a lot of good examples of those, like Ed Orgeron. Like, dear, him say he's not trying to be anybody else. Like, he doesn't know any other way, right? So, and that's why I do think that fit is important, because some of those personalities will work. Like, each area, each region, that's what makes college football unique, right? Like, each school is like its own personality.
Yeah.
So you have to have somebody that fits that personality. Doesn't mean it has to be 100% reflection, but do you, you know, have the same values? Do you know the area well? And it's critically important in Pennsylvania and that region, because there's a lot of recruits in that area, in that region. So that's why I think you do want to have somebody that's familiar with Pennsylvania, knows how to operate in that area, because you can get some really good recruiting classes just by recruiting Pennsylvania, Maryland, DC area, and doing that at a high level.
Well, that you mentioned, I'm glad, you know, DC, Maryland, and include Virginia, that is going to turn into a battleground.
Mm-hmm.
with James Franklin there. And, you know, you shouldn't make decisions on your head coach based on this, but Terry would probably keep much of the staff in place. If Terry doesn't get the job, someone else comes in, brings in all their own guys. These members of the staff could make their way south to Virginia Tech. Yep. And all of a sudden, all those inroads you have, that power gets transferred. The exodus has already begun with staff members who aren't on the playing field, you know, Andy Frank, who is or was as close as Penn State got to a general manager position, he's already gone, you know, with James Franklin. Now, he came with him from Vanderbilt, so, you know, that was no surprise. And it's not going to be a surprise when some of this coaching staff moves on with him also. So that's also going to be part, Dustin, of the pros and cons here. With Terry here, do you retain more of the current players? But with Terry getting the job, would he be able to bring in as many portal guys from outside?
Well, I mean, I do think there's something, if you're able to retain a majority of the roster that you have and maybe your recruiting class, maybe you're limited on transfer portal guys, but I'm not convinced that. I mean, there's some programs that have probably thrived in this area, but if you can get the right fits instead of just, okay, we brought in, like, Purdue had 52 guys. They're just bad this year. Like, that's not an apples to apples comparison, but it's just to show you, like, did they upgrade their roster? Yeah, probably. But you had to spend the entire offseason getting that team to gel and their chemistry to work. Like, one of the things that happened with Kurt Cignetti was he brought a lot of those players from James. So a lot of those players knew each other.
Right.
And so they understood so there wasn't as much maybe of a learning curve as you might expect. So I don't think you have to. I think you have to upgrade your roster as best you can through the transfer portal, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to bring in 30 guys. If you're able to bring in 8 or 9 and you think those guys can make a difference, maybe that's all you need. So it's very, I think everybody thinks that the transfer portal is a fix-all, especially in terms of a one-year turnaround, but that's not necessarily the case. Just because of star ratings or because they were really good at one former school doesn't mean they're going to be successful at the next. So I would rather have a majority of the team and recruits stay in place and just kind of But that's kind of been the James Franklin motto anyways. Just like, we don't have to rebuild our team through the portal. But it's going to be interesting because I have no idea what those kids are going to do or how that roster is going to look.
I don't think they do. And I believe Pat Kraft is the type who will talk to the players. You know, he's not going to acquiesce the decision-making to them. But I think he will be able to get a feel for who's staying, who's going. Now, the class of 26, many of these players not only decommitted, they've recommitted elsewhere. So it may be too late to salvage the recruiting class. And the other part to the equation is there's a lot of guys who are moving on who they, because so many guys chose to stay the extra year, what you're going to have now is, you know, graduating, moving on, starting to play Sundays, along with guys who will be hitting the portal. And just because of circumstances, a very small recruiting class. So no matter who would, even Terry, I think he'll have a bigger portal class than we've ever seen here at Penn State.
Sure. I'll throw one thing out that I don't remember the early signing period, but if Penn State makes a decision soon, and if it is Terry Smith, I think they have a chance. You can reach out to those kids, even though they've recommitted, they haven't signed on the dotted line yet. You could potentially have some kids who flip back if they know who the coaching staff is and they're familiar with them. That's one option. The other thing is Penn State's going to be in a good position in terms of the transfer portal. This is where I think the window really helps them, because now you can have, as you mentioned, Pat Kraft or whoever the next head coach is, you can have conversations with those players, and whether they choose to stay or go, Penn State's going to know exactly what they need when the portal window opens.
Yes. And that's why I think the early signing period is a couple days it's like December 3rd is like right after this, literally a couple days. So is Terry Smith and the staff already laying the groundwork? Like, hey, look, we're waiting to see what happens here. You know, we don't know which members of the staff, but hey, look, if I'm still going to be here, I want you. I want you part of this class. So, you know, there's a good chance Terry's, but you know, and if I don't get the job, I'm probably going to go down to Virginia Tech. So
why don't you just follow me wherever I go?
Yeah. Keep that. Let's keep that door open. Okay. So it is going to be fascinating. And I do believe there's such an advantage to obviously the portal, but also if you could get in before that recruiting commitment day, maybe you could salvage a few more players, but you better act quickly right after this last regular season game.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You have to act swiftly. And like I said, it's not uncommon to see players flip, and it's not like they're going to flip an entire class back to Penn State. But if you can get three or four, maybe five of those kids to recommit once they know what's in place, then maybe that'll be enough. And it's going to be an interesting couple weeks.
The last question, not an answer this week, hold it for next week. How many players do you think will commit in December and hit the portal in January?
That's a good question.
I'll give you a full week to think about it, Dustin. Happy Thanksgiving to you, to our listeners. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.